Today's critique explores from autopoiesis to living coherence, an academic white paper that beautifully applies Humberto Maturana's biological grammar to contemporary medical paradigms. But to maximize the impact of this piece, we are going to dive straight into a few key structural and thematic opportunities to elevate the text.
The integration of Maturana's theoretical framework with contemporary biological domains provides a profound philosophical shift. Yet the transition from theoretical models to practical clinical application remains highly abstract.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the weakness here is that the paper introduces brilliant paradigms like reframing disease as a costly conserved drift, but it leaves a clinical reader wondering how to actually execute these concepts.
Right, especially in a modern medical setting where, you know, rigid protocols really dictate action.
Exactly. The text relies heavily on high-level theoretical diagrams, like those nested closures of living coherence, rather than demonstrating the messy, real-world application of these ideas.
So my suggestion to fix that is to ground the philosophical framework in a concrete, longitudinal clinical case study.
Oh, okay.
We need to explicitly demonstrate the transition from traditional forcing actions to non-forcing biological participation.
That makes a lot of sense. So you'd basically walk the reader through a specific scenario, like a patient presenting with metabolic syndrome or, say, chronic autoimmune inflammation?
Yes, exactly. And show exactly what a traditional forcing intervention looks like in that context. You know, aggressively prescribing anti-inflammatories or statins to suppress isolated signals.
Right, because standard protocol essentially forces the system to hide the symptom, right? It artificially blocks an enzymatic pathway.
Precisely. And then you contrast this directly with a non-forcing protocol based on living coherence.
So instead of just suppressing the symptom, you map out the patient's allostatic load.
Yeah. You address sleep hygiene, restore mucosal integrity, and time interventions based on circadian rhythms.
To support the organism's self-organization.
Exactly.
But wait, let me challenge that application for a second. If the framework argues against imposing coherence from outside, how does a practitioner justify any pharmacological intervention without violating the system's structural determinism?
That is a really crucial question.
Because, I mean, if you prescribe insulin or antibiotics, aren't those forcing actions? Are we basically saying all drugs are detrimental?
Well, no, and that's exactly where the paper needs us to clarify things. It needs to better distinguish between a forcing command and an attuned perturbation.
Okay, an attuned perturbation?
Yeah, so a drug like insulin doesn't have to be viewed as a mechanical override. In a structurally determined system, insulin is a perturbation that the organism integrates according to its own structure.
Oh, I see. So it's really about the clinician's orientation. Are they using insulin to indefinitely mask the problem, which is a forcing command, or are they using it temporarily to reduce acute allostatic load?
Precisely. They use it so the organism's self-regulatory capacities can actually come back online. The insulin creates biological breathing room.
Okay, I love that. So, moving on, once we have that case study, we also need to look at how the sheer density of the language itself affects the reader's journey.
Paper's innovative core arguments.
Yeah, definitely. The weaknesses that the text rapidly stacks complex Maturanan terms, like autopoiesis and languaging, alongside incredibly dense biological systems.
Like mitochondrial psychobiology or redox signaling.
Right. It creates this encyclopedic list-like feel in the middle sections without giving the reader any narrative breathing room.
Which makes it really difficult for the reader to synthesize how all these systems dynamically interact.
Honestly, reading the middle sections right now feels like looking at the blueprints for a building's plumbing, electrical, and structural framing all at exactly the same time.
That is the perfect analogy. It's just too much at once.
I wonder if we've considered guiding the reader through the house room by room first.
I think that's exactly what's needed. So my suggestion is to implement a reoccurring narrative anchor or biological motif that evolves alongside the introduction of each new biological closure.
To basically weave the disparate sections into a unified story?
Exactly. Instead of an encyclopedia, we thread a single conceptual needle through everything.
Okay, so what specific biological motif would you use for that anchor?
Well, we could use the concept of immune tolerance, which they introduce in Section 5, as that continuous thread.
Oh, right. So when discussing the microbiome in Section 6, explicitly tie it back to how immune tolerance acts as the bridge between host and niche.
Yes. You frame the microbiome not just as a separate anatomical system, but as the specific environment that immune tolerance is actively navigating.
And then later, when discussing disease as an attractor in Section 9, we revisit the exact same immune tolerance thread to demonstrate how a previously adaptive tolerance can drift into costly chronic inflammation.
Exactly. You show the perturbation, the compensation, and the cost accumulation all through the lens of that same immune tolerance motif.
It just gives the reader a solid handrail to hold on to.
Right. It drastically reduces that cognitive load.
That makes so much sense. Okay, let's look at the final piece of the puzzle here.
The argument presents a compelling unified theory of living coherence, but it overlooks an active engagement with the friction points where reductionist medicine remains undeniably effective and necessary.
Right, the weakness here is that the paper seamlessly integrates various biological disciplines into Maturana's grammar, but it lacks a robust stress test against acute medical crises.
Yeah, the limits and safeguards section briefly mentions that decisive intervention may be necessary, but it doesn't adequately explore the boundaries.
Where living coherence frameworks have to temporarily yield to aggressive mechanistic intervention.
Exactly. It leaves a huge gray area.
Which raises a constructively skeptical point. I mean, is there a risk that by framing all disease as costly, conserved drift, the text might inadvertently minimize the sheer randomness of sudden catastrophic genetic or environmental failures?
That's a very real risk.
Because, you know, a severed artery from a car crash has no adaptive origin whatsoever, right?
Right. It's not a compensatory pattern, which is why my suggestion is to expand those final sections to directly address these limitations.
To specifically analyze that gray area.
Yes. Analyzing where a practitioner must toggle between forcing mechanistic life-saving and non-forcing recovery.
So dedicate a paragraph to analyzing a case of acute trauma, severe bacterial sepsis, or an aggressive malignancy.
Exactly. Detail how non-forcing action essentially pauses when the autopoietic unity is seconds away from catastrophic collapse.
Right, because when a patient is in septic shock, you don't talk about sleep rhythms. You use vasopressors to forcibly constrict blood vessels.
You impose external control to stop the collapse. But the crucial addition is explaining the biological grammar of returning to living coherence in the ICU recovery phase.
Oh, like explicitly mapping out how to hand the reins back to the organism's self-regulatory closures after a necessary forcing intervention.
Exactly. Think about weaning the patient off a mechanical ventilator. You slowly reduce the positive end expiratory pressure, the mandatory respiratory rate.
Allowing the patient's own physiological drive to initiate the breath. You systematically reduce the constraint of the machine.
Right, to support their own respiratory drive, allowing them to reorganize their viable coupling with their environment.
It makes the concept of non-forcing action deeply palatable to a clinically trained audience.
It really does. It validates traditional emergency medicine while maintaining the integrity of the framework.
Well, that brings us to the end of our analysis. To summarize the core of the critique, the paper provides a phenomenal paradigm shift, but requires strategic grounding to maximize its impact.
We have three concrete, actionable steps to implement. First, anchor the theoretical models in a longitudinal clinical case study.
Second, thread a specific biological motif, like immune tolerance, throughout the middle sections to ease the cognitive load of the jargon.
And third, stress test the framework explicitly against acute, catastrophic medical emergencies to strengthen its credibility.
Thank you to the listener for submitting this deeply fascinating material. We warmly invite you to submit your revised draft back into the show for a follow-up critique. The body isn't a machine waiting for a replacement gear. It's more like a complex traffic grid.
Right.
The clinician's job isn't to airlift cars out of a jam with brute force. It's to intelligently adjust the timing of the stoplights so the system can naturally clear its own congestion.